Welcome to The Best Policy, the new podcast from the publishers of The Insurer. My name is Peter Hastie, and those of you who don't know me, I'm the managing editor of The Insurer. And those of you who do know me are, quite wisely, tuning in to hear the thoughts of our first guest on Best Policy, who just happens to be one of the industry's best known and most successful entrepreneurs, Stephen Catlin. Over the next 15 minutes, I ask Stephen a wide range of questions relating to the industry, the COVID-19 crisis, and how it should be responding. I've no doubt they'll be thoughtful, considered, and at times a little controversial. After all, Stephen has never been accused of being a herd thinker, but what he is a passionate advocate of the industry. So I begin by asking what he makes of the recent proposals by a number of US states to compel insurers to pay on BI policies regardless of any pandemic exclusions.
I think I'm going to be very careful what I say about the US legal system for obvious reasons, but it could be used against me or against the industry. My personal view is that we should actually, at this moment in time, be concentrating on the future and demonstrating that we can and will and want to work with governments going forward. And I think the comments that John Doyle has made from Marsh about the need for the equivalent of a TRIA in the US, and indeed by implication the equivalent of a Paul Ree in the UK, is a good place to start, because it demonstrates that we as an industry do want to work with government within the confines of our capital structure. I mean, some of the press comments we made recently are really quite unhelpful and misleading, but they do demonstrate clearly a distrust of the industry, maybe even a disdain of the industry. And I think certain comments made by certain trade bodies, I'm thinking of one in the UK in particular, have been at best clumsily worded. It's not a question of us asking for the government to underpin us. It's a question of us actually trying to offer a risk transfer to the government on an affordable basis, such that we mitigate their costs and thereby save the taxpayer money. And I'm more interested at the moment in concentrating on the future, because this is going to happen again. This is not a one-off, and there's some big lessons to be learned. I mean, how was hindsight, easy to say now, but how nobody really spoke about the economic consequences of a shutdown on a global basis caused by a pandemic is frankly mind-boggling, isn't it, really? And for nobody to really model the economic consequences of what might happen is quite baffling. But we are where we are. We've got to try and resolve the situation as quickly as possible. I'm so glad I'm not a politician at the moment, because they've got terrible decisions to take. I mean, that's an apolitical comment. It's just, they're going to make judgment calls the whole time. And they've got to make judgment calls on inadequate data, information, but with a population that is frightened at best, angry at worst. So my view is we need to look forward at the moment.
You reference, in fact, a kind of public-private initiative along the lines of TRIA or Paul Ree in the UK. Perhaps focusing on the UK first, because it doesn't have to be a Paul Ree. There could be we've also tackled flood in a different way, of course. And do you think there are particular merits in one solution over another?
Well, I mean, I have to disclose an interest in that I'm chairman of the advisory board, Paul Ree. So I have got in recent months quite close to what's going on in Paul Ree. Paul Ree is actually much, as you know, much more mature than Flood Ree. It's been going for 27 years now. And the fund that has been created from carriers' money is £6.5 billion now, which is extraordinary to have grown the fund to that size in the time allotted. It has proven today to be a success between a public-private partnership. And I can see an argument saying you should put Paul Ree and Pan Ree together on the basis that you've already got a big fund there. You've got a structure that works. Okay, the causation is different, but the effect is similar. And anybody who says, well, the insurance industry just doesn't need this. I mean, it is actually, if you think about it, inconsistent. It's been accepted by governments around the world that the concentration of risk for terrorism makes it very difficult to insure at a price that is viable. But if you can't do terrorism, how the hell can you do pandemic? Because I don't think it takes much of a rocket scientist to work out that pandemic is a much, much bigger capital cost. And I think part of the reason for me saying I want to look forward is you can establish the principles of the modus operandi going forward, just maybe a bit easier to deal with the past. But you have, by finding a future solution, actually contextualized the past and the ability or otherwise of the industry to pay. I mean, if you look at the total contingent cost to date, I don't know what it is, but I bet you it's 5 times total market cap of the worldwide P&C industry. How the hell does anybody think in their right mind we can pay all the claims? We haven't got the money. I mean, governments could take us out if they want to, I guess, but I can't see how that's in the interest of governments. I can't see how it's in the interest of taxpayers. I can't see how it's in the interest of the policyholder, actually. I mean, sense has to be applied here.
Stephen, is your view that that if the industry comes up with sensible, practical solutions for longer term, that would sort of almost help with the industry's reputation and sort of dealing with politicians in the current? In other words, that if it looks to be acting responsibly and tackling the issue going forward, that will actually be helpful in terms of trying to avoid it being used as a political football, which, you know, there potentially is a risk, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be unhelpful, is it? That's for sure. I mean, I think if we're seen to be proactive, that would most likely be deemed to be helpful. And it's not as if we haven't seen this type of circumstance before. Okay, we haven't seen a pandemic of this nature before, even though it's been gazetted for a number of years now. But we have seen unexpected losses, and I think 9/11 would be a very good example of that, or something which came about, which at the time, I don't think anybody ever contemplated. And to some extent, we're in the same boat here, because yes, people contemplated the pandemic, but nobody contemplated the economic consequences of a global shutdown.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Are you concerned, Stephen, that the ability of the industry, I'm talking specifically UK insurance industry, the ability of the industry to perhaps talk with one voice, I mean, is there a danger that there may be a sense of politicking within the industry coming up with different ideas? I mean, for example, the ABI hasn't always had a joined up set of thinking with Paul Rees. It seems to want to have kind of definitive micro solutions, such as Flood Re, for example. Are you concerned that you know, the government may be looking to the industry for clarity and solutions, and instead the industry is coming up with almost competing ideas?
Yes, I mean, that's always a risk. And politicians the world over, if they can divide and rule, they will do so. And the minute they see a kink, they get the old sledgehammer out and try and drive a wedge into it.
Yeah.
And that's common practice, is it not? I think we've got some examples where the industry has worked together. I mean, the IDF comes to mind, where, you know, we had alpha brokers, alpha carriers around a table together talking alongside the World Bank and the United Nations to try and address a common challenge. And I, in my own mind, I'm thinking, well, why can't we do something of like kind with pandemic? It is crying out for people to work together. And when I say people, I don't just mean carriers. I mean, this has got to be working with distribution. Well, I'm over the weekend, I spoke to two or three of the top guys of both Marsh, Guy Carpenter, Aon and Willis, as much as anything else, to see where they were at in general terms. And I think it's fair to say that actually, Convex is so blessed in not having some of the challenges everybody else has got, which probably gives me more thinking time than most CEOs have, to get on the front foot and think about these issues. And one of them said to me, Stephen, you know what, I've spent the last 3 weeks trying to work out how to get them pay 50,000 people, which is a very fair reaction. But it seems to me that all three of them recognise this is an industry issue. They all recognise they can't deal with it on their own, either as a distributor or indeed as the broking fraternity as a whole. So I think there is a growing consensus, actually, that for something like this, we do all need to pull together to find a structure. The competition comes in afterwards. Once the structure is set up and everything is, you know, everybody knows how they're going to do it, then people can sort of do their competition bit, whether it be carrier or broker. And I'm fine with that. And not if I don't encourage it, actually.
This may be too idealistic, but could you ever see a solution which would be a kind of a pan-national solution? In other words, At the moment, you know, we see some of these sort of existential catastrophic issues being dealt with in pretty effective public-private partnerships, Paul Wee, as you mentioned, as an example. Could you ever see something being done across national borders, or is that just too naive, and that, and what could ever only work would be public-private partnerships with the government, the sovereign government in each country?
Well, I mean, it's a lovely idea, Peter, but I just don't think it's ever going to work. Yeah. And I think we have to work with individual governments in individual countries, and we need to be apolitical too in how we treat them. Same way, but when I'm being chair of a trade association, either in the UK or Bermuda, you've got to be apolitical so you can actually deal with the government who's in power on the day. It's not for us to dictate what is right or wrong in politics, but that is doable. You may recall some time ago, and I was drew the comments actually on reflection, I said that maybe we ought to have a trio equivalent for cyber. But the trouble with that is, with cyber, you're never quite sure where the proximate cause of loss is, for sure.
Yeah.
You think you might know, you don't know definitely. And frankly, with pandemic, you don't actually absolutely know with certainty where the whole thing started. I mean, yeah, it's been said it started in China, but I doubt anybody could prove that, actually.
Yeah.
So I think probably the only realistic way forward is to have industry relationships with the government of the day in the country in which they happen to be trading in, or country.
And so if you have a magic wand, what would be your preferred look forward solutions in terms of the industry working with governments to tackle pandemic threats in the future?
Well, I think the structure of TRIA and Paul Ree are appropriate. Let me talk about Paul Ree because it's probably closer to home for both of us. I mean, in essence, with Paul Ree now, you've got pure risk transfer for the direct market at circa £2 billion. You've got another circa £2 billion of reinsurance on top of that. Then you've got a $6.5 billion self-created fund by the supporting carriers. And then once all that's been blown through, so that's £10.5 billion, then it goes to government. So that means actually that the industry is taking significant amount of risk off the balance sheet of the government. It helps the government, therefore it helps the taxpayer. And I think that is a realistic structure. Whether it's good to have it separate from Paul Ree or together, that I'm not sure of. I can put arguments to you for and against that. And I think in terms of, it may be the case in terms of the practicalities of placing the risk, that different carriers will have different appetites, whether it be for terrorism or whether it be from pandemic. So it may be that the market dictates anyway that they have to be separate, but we'd have to explore that. But to my way of thinking, that is it's a sensible structure. I mean, it's a bit like saying Paul Ree, where they put in cyber terrorism. Well, I'm entirely comfortable with that, actually, because I know I've got a capped risk. You know, from past conversations, where I become uncomfortable with cyber is I can't actually work out my downside risk to capital, but I can't work out the total of my systemic risk. I don't know that anybody can. And when you get into that type of situation, the industry can't cope. And then people say, well, the industry should cope. Well, okay, on paper we could cope, but we'd have to increase our market cap, or a paid up capital rather, by a factor of 10. And if you're going to service that much capital, prices go up through the roof everywhere. And nobody's going to like that.
Yeah.
It's sort of a compromise. It's to how much the industry can take and offer competitive pricing before it needs to pass it on to the government. And the more it takes, the industry takes, the more capital it has to have, and the higher the earnings it has to have to justify having that capital. Because actually, the people that ultimately decide what happens in an insurance company, the shareholders, and in any other company. And the shareholders know full well they're in the risk business, and they don't want a substandard return for being in a risk business, which actually is exactly where they are today. And some of these comments in the press about all this surplus money in the industry, well, hang on a bit. Actually, the investors aren't very happy. Why aren't they very happy? They're very unhappy because they think that they've got a substandard return for the risks that they're taking. And do you know what? I agree with them. I think it's a fair comment.
Thank you, Stephen. That completes the first of Best Policy's two-part interview with the founder of Convex Group. The second half will be available to listen and download from our website, www.theinsurer.com, from the 9th of April. Thank you.